Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Kate Neville, who's the founder and CEO of Neville Career Consulting, to talk a little bit about lawyers transitioning to new opportunities, particularly not involving law firms, a question that we get a lot. And of course, we did a webcast on a similar topic last May. But I thought I'd touch base with Kate because she has been in a law firm doing corporate and securities at Simpson Thacher in New York and you know, doing something pretty novel here in Washington, D.C. So the first question for you, Kate, is are you a life coach or a recruiter? What is your role?
Well, first of all, I do not do placement, so that is something I often have to distinguish. But in terms of a life coach, I mean, my feeling about it is that coaching is a fairly new field, and they're working on getting accreditation standards, but really at this point, there's no barrier to entry, and so there's no real quality control, and it's very hard to know kind of what the background of each individual who does that is. And coaches, you know, some of them obviously are very good, but they focus on different issues. So I would say a life coach is more about personal issues, and what I do is really more about career, just that you're not happy in what you're doing, and what might your options be professionally, and how do you actually get there? So I do what I do because my own experience was when I felt like a firm was not a good fit for me long term. I mean, I really enjoyed my time at a firm, actually, but I just knew it wasn't going to be what I wanted to do forever. And so what are my options? I mean, I am one of those people, and I don't think I'm alone, who went to law school to keep their options open. I was a history major undergrad, and kind of I think universities don't do a very good job of helping students who are good at school figure out how that translates into a profession that they might find satisfying. So law is often considered a fallback degree for those people, and even those who think they want to practice law and have always gotten feedback since they were a kid, oh, you should be a lawyer, you'd be good at this, or, you know, watched Ally McBeal or other things, it's very hard to know what it's like until you're actually doing it. So when you're in a firm and it doesn't seem like what you want to do forever, who do you turn to? And my position was that I wasn't necessarily interested in positions that recruiters had. At that point, the market was such that headhunters were calling frequently, but with positions that obviously people are willing to pay them a fee to fill, as well as typically very traditional practice of law. So, so I'm not a coach. I'm not a recruiter. I'm also maybe a career counselor, but again, my experience with that was somewhat frustrating in that I felt like the resources were mainly focused on assessments, standardized assessments like Myers-Briggs or the Strong Interest Survey, and less helpful in terms of, no, practical reality. If I don't want to go back to another grad school, what are my options here and how do I market myself for them? And, you know, the assessments, some people find them helpful. Some people find them very anxiety-producing in that, oh, I'm this four-letter combination, and that's going to drive my search. Or the Strong Interest Survey will say, well, you have the same interests as a social science librarian. And that, in my view, didn't get you very far. So I call my practice a career consulting because I see it less of a long-term relationship and more of a kind of coming in as needed, helping to focus, helping to articulate what it is that you want, because that's kind of the initial hurdle is, so what are you interested in? And a lot of people find that a difficult question to answer. So starting there in terms of what does point B look like, and then once that's identified, okay, how marketable are you in that type of area? What exactly is that work like? And, you know, starting the networking process, both to solicit that type of information so you know whether or not it's a good fit for you. But at the same time, you need to make a good impression. And lawyers seem to vary quite a bit in terms of how their comfort level. Everybody varies their comfort level with networking, but I think it means different things to different people. So a lot of what I do is help lawyers become comfortable in that process because it is by far the most common way people get jobs, particularly at mid-level and senior level.
I find for a lot of some of the people, I guess, that come to me with the, similar types of questions, that they've reached almost what I call a, like a panic stage in their career. And then I think when you're in that mode, it's hard to see that you do have options, things that you hadn't thought of. Let's talk about sort of that sort of drastic case scenario, but which really isn't drastic, sort of transitioning completely out of law to other professions. You know, do you see examples of lawyers able to transfer their skill sets to something
new? I do.
New?
I do. I think, you know, it one kind of hurdle that, you know, everyone wants it to happen tomorrow, and it's not that kind of process. It is going to take some time, and it somewhat depends on what groundwork you've laid to date. I mean, I'm obviously very sympathetic to people who work in law firms and are so busy. They don't have a lot of time to join professional associations, do, you know, kind of professional speaking and other types of activities that might get them more exposure on topics that they're truly interested in. It does take time, but certainly people who worked in between undergrad and law school are at an advantage in the sense that they've been in an environment, a work environment outside of a law firm typically. And, you know, people I think, say financial analyst, that's a common, not common, but I've seen several people have that type of background and they think, well, okay, I'll go get my MBA, but a lot of the senior people in a lot of those firms have JDs as well, so they get the JD MBA. But when they start interviewing, a lot of the MBAs and banks and other types of employers will say, well, why'd you get the JD? And in some ways, getting a JD can be a negative, which is really sad because a lot of people do it to try to expand their opportunities, and then they get out of law school and they feel pigeonholed, oh, we're putting you in the general counsel pile. And that obviously is limiting in terms of what their options might be. So for people who think they never want to practice law again, or you know they just want to think about what their options might be, whether it's practicing law or not, I mean, I would encourage people to think about, well, what is it that you're really interested in? If you can identify a content area, obviously that's going to be helpful, because genuine enthusiasm does make a difference in the networking process. But some people have a hard time just coming up with that out of thin air. Or what they like, you know, is listening to alternative rock music or reading food reviews. I mean, something where it's not really a market. And some people pursue that, obviously. But you pretty much need to pursue it on an unpaid level before you're going to walk into a job that someone's going to hire you to do that. And I would say that's true in a lot of things, in that volunteering, whether it's traditional practice in pro bono cases, that's one thing. But there are other ways to volunteer. People serve on boards of nonprofit organizations, and particularly if they want to move into management or operations type positions, that's a good thing to do. People volunteer, you know, to serve on alumni committees of their schools, and if they want to think about university administration, that's obviously a good thing to do. So those are just a couple of examples. But, you know, I honestly think that lawyers can do a variety of things and that they are smart people, they're trained to think well, but from the employer perspective, they really don't see that in many cases. And so it is kind of a rebuttable presumption, like, oh, you're a lawyer. And as we all know, there are some stereotypes in that you're going to be kind of obnoxious and argumentative, and you do have to kind of overcome that and speak clearly and not use legalese and not present an argument in everything that you say, and to be deferential in terms of other people's training, because I think many lawyers feel like, well, I could do that. I could, you know, I went to law school because it's harder to get into than a graduate program. Or the, now, that may not always be the case, but some lawyers have that belief. But then you can't come across like that when you're talking to somebody who has that type of degree. You obviously want to be cognizant that you didn't go the traditional preparation route and that you're very aware of that and that, okay, what are your skill sets that you bring to the table that are going to help the employer. I find a lot of lawyers talk about their own personal journey and what they don't like about the practice of law. And to be honest, the employer doesn't really care about that. The employer wants to know kind of how can you make my life easier? And so rather than sending out the same resume you used to get your law firm job, you need to do the work for them. You can't just assume that the prospective employer is going to know, oh, well, okay, well, if you've done litigation for multinational corporations, that means you have great project management skills. It probably does mean that, but that's not clear on the face of it. So I find often that lawyers who are used to getting a certain hourly rate and are very kind of respected in their field send out the same resume. Sometimes they don't even write a cover letter, and then they're shocked when they don't get called for an interview. But really, there is a process that lawyers need to go through in explaining what they do bring to the table in terms of research skills, writing skills, and again, kind of not just writing briefs, but writing for audiences, like client memos, if you're having to explain certain legal concepts or recent complicated regulations. You know, if you put that into lay terms language, layman's language, that is a marketable skill. Making presentations to sophisticated audiences, lawyers do that all the time. Training, I mean, that is something obviously that a lot of in-house attorneys do, but it doesn't have to be in the general counsel's office. It could be training on a variety of things. And again, being able to synthesize complex information and present it in a way that is user-friendly is something people need to do, A, with their resume, and B, cover letter, and, you know, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Kind of what is it that, why would you hire you for this kind of job? What skill set do you have? What experience do you have? And what committed interest? If you can show a demonstrated interest in involvement in an area that you're interested in, that's going to make it much easier because it's not like, oh, I woke up yesterday and the law market is terrible, so I'll try X. You need to have a much more persuasive argument than that in terms of why you're interested and how your skills translate.
What about, I know a common move for folks in law firms is to go in-house. Sometimes it happens because a client, you know, hires them. But what about in the other cases where someone in a firm knows they want to get out of the law firm for whatever reason and they think in-house is for them? What are some success stories of what that would look like?
To going to, from a firm to an in-house position. And that, you know, ranges quite a bit. I mean, there are certainly recruiters who specialize in in-house. And I think recruiters can be valuable in the sense of having a longer-term discussion with them, not necessarily just, gee, do you have anything for me right now? But, you know, what have you seen for people with my background? What types of opportunities do you feel like are, A, increasing in demand, and B, where my skill set would be particularly marketable? So, and good recruiters will have that conversation with you. So definitely I would not discount recruiters, but you want to, again, there's no barrier to entry. Kind of anyone with a computer and a phone can do it. So you definitely want to do some homework about who people you know have used and who has had a good reputation. Otherwise, again, I think the networking helps the most. I mean, a lot of people, let's say, want to go in-house to a university, and that's a interesting job. Universities have to deal with all kinds of things, from intellectual property issues to First Amendment issues to privacy to real estate. A lot of people find that very appealing, and a lot of lawyers were very good students, and so being in an academic setting is somewhat comforting and appealing to them. But, you know, they're not alone in that, and those are incredibly difficult jobs to get. So rather than just sending in an application cold, if you see a posting that's open, think through who you know, who might know someone there. And hopefully you've laid the groundwork where you've been in touch with administrators or academics or someone who you had a good experience with, either in college or law school, because a lot of people liked college better than they liked law school, and got to develop relationships with, let's say, dean of students for career services sometimes, even though a lot of people express frustration with their career services office. That may be that over time, individual relationships develop. So it's important to think through that, and then what information do you need? All right, well, how do people learn about these jobs? Is it typically word of mouth? Is it posting on certain websites? Any posting you have to recognize is just going to get thousands of applications. And if you've gotten an opportunity to speak with someone informationally before there's actually a posting, that's going to make a world of difference because you've already expressed your interest. You've already made yourself known. And if they then make a call and say, oh, I talked to that person, they're good, we should definitely talk to them. That's how people get jobs. So professional associations, I mean, again, there is, I believe the acronym is NACUA, the National Association of College and University Council. And, you know, join their listserv, become a member. Usually these organizations, some you have to be an institutional member, but many you just pay a couple hundred dollars and you're a member. So put that on your resume. If it's possible and there's a bar committee that you know of that's in a content area that you are interested in moving into, let's say you want to do real estate development, well, a good way to kind of lay that groundwork is to get involved with organizations that serve clients in those industries. So you'll be exposed more. Again, you'll kind of get outside your office and have conversations with people who do the kind of work that you want to do, and then you're much more able to tailor your experience and background in terms of how you go in-house. I mean, the traditional route, as you say, is to go to a client, but that, you know, the in-house market is tight, and I would say up until very recently, it's been tighter than law firms. I remember in law school people saying, oh, well, I'll go to a firm, and if I don't like it, I'll just go in-house. Well, in-house positions were much more competitive at that point. Now with the downturn in the economy, obviously, firm hiring has changed substantially, yeah. But in-house roles have picked up a little more quickly, and again, I don't want to overstate this, but from what I understand, people are saying, well, I can get a bargain. I can hire someone who either wants to leave a firm or has been laid off from a firm who used to actually do my work at this very high billable rate. I can bring them in-house, and they'll do the same work for me for much less, but that means sometimes that lawyers who expect the workload to be very different are unpleasantly surprised, because if you're brought in and told you're doing the deal, you're running the deal, that is very different than being the liaison to the firm that's doing the deal. So I would say in all these instances, it's important to do your homework. There are some instances where people have developed individual relationships with clients because they're the point person. And I would say that's not the best place to start to investigate in-house opportunities. Obviously, that's tricky. If it's an existing client of the firm, you're still employed by the firm, do some groundwork first among people who don't necessarily work with your firm to get some information, and then eventually you can broach that with a client, but that's not where you want to start.
So any sort of last words on what lawyers thinking about making a change can do to help them decide whether they should be doing it?
Any change? I would say figure out what your priorities are, that you don't, as you say, you don't want to just leap from a panicked position. And a lot of lawyers feel like they'll take anything. You know, some people say, oh, I'd rather work at Starbucks than do what I'm doing. Not that many actually do that. But what is it that you want out of your work life, at both at this point in time and thinking down the road 15 years, so that if, say, you know, money's not important to you right now, you've paid off your debt and you don't have responsibilities with dependents, then okay. But 15 years from now, if you do, make sure that the option you choose now is not going to foreclose the option to get into a more lucrative type of position later. The other thing is the role. What role do you really enjoy? Is it research and writing? Is it giving presentations? Is it being in meetings with people? Is it, you know, I have some people who unfortunately say they're at their desk 13 hours a day and they don't have to speak to another human being to get their job done and they're miserable. But then I have other people who come in and say, I'm in meetings all day long with people I can't stand. So it's important to do your research. Obviously, every employer differs. But I would say get out there and talk to people who do the type of work that you're interested in and figure out how to network appropriately. That is both going to expose you to opportunities, even if it's 2 months down the road. Somebody gets a call and they say, oh, I think we're going to have to hire somebody to do X. Do you know anybody who does that? And they're like, oh, I was just talking to somebody who wants to do X. That's a very common scenario. But you have to make a good impression. So prepare for those networking conversations and those informational interviews in a way that makes you engaging and highlights your skills that you want to highlight. And don't ask someone for a job. That is not a way to network. Don't talk bitterly about your current employer or former employer or about, you made this big mistake. You never meant to go. You shouldn't have gone to law school. What are they going to do about that? Or, I don't know. I could do this. I could do that. That's not going to be helpful either. So you really need to think about how you strategically approach the networking.
I appreciate your time, Kate. This is really good stuff. And might be checking in with you from the time to time to see how, if anything has changed.
Great. I enjoyed it.